Either way, it was a common thing in many people's lives. If someone wanted to watch porn before the internet, they had to go to an adult store, rent, or purchase a video, and either use one of those sticky-ass private rooms to watch it, or take it home and figure out a time to watch it when their spouse, roommates, and/or kids weren't around. Of course, some people were more progressive and watched it with their significant other, but my point remains, it was a little bit more difficult to get it at that time. Then, the internet. And I was Generation Z, the post-internet generation. Porn has been around me in some shape or form for my entire life, whether it be a classmate at school showing me something on his smartphone, the presidential P-tapes, subscription movie services increasingly pushing the boundaries, or the Two Girls, One Cup reboot of 2025. All this to say, Grace started by giving me a pretty sloppy, hardcore BJ, all thanks to the porn I'd seen. And my reaction wasn't what I would have expected or fantasized. My first reaction was to push her away. I had created a monster. She took that to mean I wanted her to go harder, which was not the case. You can't...
I can't what?
She asked, looking up at me.
I thought you wanted this.
Confusion swept across her face as she tuned into my thoughts. Do you see what I'm thinking here? She nodded. I guess I'm trying to say, you shouldn't look in my mind and believe the things I've seen are normal, because they're not normal. Then again, maybe nothing is normal. Well, maybe they're normal to some people, but no, don't look in my mind for those types of things.
So, no blowjob?
I nearly slapped myself. Of course, blowjob, but just take it easy. No reason to get, too hardcore. She wiped her mouth and shrugged.
You seem to have watched a lot of that.
It's become the norm in pornography.
Why's that?
Oh, shit. I went with the first explanation that came to my lips. My guess is that the more men lose control over the world, the more they look to entertainment that shows them a side of masculinity they assumed they once had. It's all a false representation, though. Shit. I'm not trying to ruin the moment here.
You aren't,
she told me.
Your wild mind is interesting. It has seen so much, but experienced so little. It's hard to separate the differences sometimes because I don't quite understand the memory.
That's why you shouldn't be reading my mind. Look, Grace, just be yourself, and forget what you see and hear. I tapped my temple. Because I'm a product of my generation. Shut up, Gideon, you're ruining the moment, a voice inside my head hissed. This was definitely my voice. Well, that, or the voice of my penis. Just, yeah, sorry. Take it easy. Don't read my mind. I thought that was a rule.
Don't read your mind. Don't turn into Veronique. Don't shift in public. Don't turn into your mom. And don't give you sloppy, hardcore blowjobs.
Grace laughed and climbed back onto my lap. She pressed the fabric covering her crotch aside so that my quickly hardening penis was now pressed against her wet mound.
Any more rules?
I chuckled. Let's keep these rules to ourselves. How's that? Especially that last one.
I like you, Ryder Gideon,
Grace said as I slipped inside her. I like you too, I told her. A lot. Chapter 11. Veronique's Stats. Get your head in the game, was my first thought when I awoke the next morning. There were a ton of things I needed to handle, and I had no idea how I would compartmentalize them. So, rather than relive the slightly awkward yet badass bit of lovemaking I'd been privy to the previous night, I decided to make a list of current issues that needed to be addressed. I sat up in bed, grabbed the pen and paper on the nightstand, and started jotting things down. 1. Find out why my picture was on Grace's drive. To shorten this note, I wrote, Picture Grace Drive. I knew I didn't have superpowers, even if I felt that way when Grace was next to me controlling someone, and I was simply giving commands. Regardless, there was more to this story, and I didn't want it to become an unfinished plotline. 2. Decide if you will use the code Ken Kim gave you to supposedly upgrade Grace and Veronique's abilities, written as upgrade yes or no. It could be an attempt to track us. I wasn't certain where I stood on the Ken Kim front. After all, Dorian did show up within hours of our first conversation. For all I knew, his interest in our situation was a ruse meant to get close to me. I decided to forego using the code for now. 3. Figure out what to do with Dorian, or, as I wrote it, Dorian. If we let her heal up, was there any possibility she would join us? Or would she be like Angel, dedicated to her role even if she'd eventually be decommissioned? Since her abilities allowed her to instantly move away from us if given the chance, freeing Dorian, even briefly, could be a terrible decision on our part. 4. Come up with a plan to handle the Austin situation became simply Austin. We would definitely need to meet David Butler in a public place. I was starting to second-guess meeting him at all, but getting to the bottom of the mother situation would help me better tell the story of the secret program that created Grace and Veronique, which led me to my next point. 5. Mother, a.k.a. Mother. If she really was as powerful as Veronique claimed, then getting to her wouldn't be easy. And this begged the question, what would we do after we got to her? What was our endgame?
Our endgame is stopping these experiments and uniting the subjects that care to be united.
Grace said in my head. Ah, so you're up.
I am.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate for a moment, I said aloud. Grace still had the blanket up to her neck and her eyes were closed, which made talking to her in this way even stranger. What good will destroying the facilities do?
It will prevent them from torturing people like me.
I get that reasoning. But what happens if they just build more facilities?
That's why we have to go after Mother, too, and anyone who decides to work with her. Doing so will prevent them from creating more of us. You are overanalyzing this, Ryder Gideon. We find, we destroy.
You're sounding more and more like Veronique. With her eyes still closed, Grace's face began to morph into Veronique's.
Maybe it's better to be a warrior than a thinker.
Point taken. She reverted back in an instant, clearly toying with me.
Go get cleaned up. It's time to write. Will you finish your next novella today?
I don't know. I'm inspired, but I still need to write at least 10,000 more words.
Then do it and get inspired. Look at your sales. People are enjoying this book. You probably have more emails, too. And the cover is also nice.
Got it. I slipped out of bed and went into the long bathroom connecting our two rooms to find Veronique sitting on the counter, completely nude, her nipples erect and a devious look on her face. Sorry, I said as I started to turn back.
I was waiting for you.
The door shut behind me and locked. This is not a great time. She got down and took two steps closer to me.
I need new clothes,
she said once she was about a foot away from me. Okay.
I don't like the country clothes.
That's fine. We can get you new clothes.
Why are you so nervous around me?
She asked, placing a hand on my chest. I think you know why.
When you're ready.
With that, Veronique moved away, glanced at me one last time, and stepped out. Damn, I muttered when I caught a glimpse of her ass as the door shut. Veronique would be the death of me. A quick shower, a visit to the breakfast buffet with Grace, and two cups of coffee later, I was ready to write. Books are all about pacing and keeping the reader reading. This is the exact opposite of what it would be like to describe writing. So I'm going to gloss over it a little. Rather than tell you about how I got off to a late start because I couldn't figure out how I wanted a certain passage, or how I confused what happened in Chapter 10 with what should have happened in Chapter 9, or how it took me at least 15 minutes to install updates on my new laptop, I'll just report back that I was able to get about 4,000 words written. I had headphones on at that point, listening to a YouTube super-intelligent brainwave frequency track for focus. I'd hit a roadblock. There was a section I needed to fill in regarding Veronique's abilities. But since she hadn't let me check her drive, I was still missing that section. I could hear her and Grace in the other room, watching yet another home improvement show, and I figured she could spare a moment. For the sake of literature? That line might not work on her, but then again, it wasn't very long ago that she was threatening to kill me if I didn't write a book in 2 days. So I tried it. "Hey, Veronique," I said as I went into the other room. I glanced from the two women on the bed to Dorian, who still sat in the chair with her eyes closed. It was a weird visual, and I tried not to look at her too much because it was like staring at a corpse.
"Can I help you?"
she asked, without looking away from the TV. "I know we've been putting it off, but I need to go through your stats and abilities again. It's for the book. I should be finishing today, and I'd like this stuff to be in its own section. It's important. It's for the sake of literature." She shrugged.
"Okay. Tell me what happens,"
she said to Grace as she got up and joined me in the other room. I had to laugh. "I've been asking you about doing this for days, and now you just say okay and come in? We could have done this way earlier."
"I don't know how I feel about you plugging into me, but you said it was for the sake of literature. So we'll see what happens."
She narrowed her eyes at me. "I promise not to mess with anything. I just wanted to examine the grayed out sections of your abilities menu."
"Grayed out?"
she asked as she lay down on the bed. "Last I checked, portions of your abilities were grayed out and I couldn't adjust them." She shrugged.
"I don't really want you adjusting them."
"That's fine, but I need to know what you're capable of, and I might be able to make you stronger by seeing them. I won't change anything without your permission. How's that?"
"Okay."
The air conditioner clicked on, and I glanced at it.
"Did it scare you?"
"No, just not used to always hearing that thing turn on and off by itself." Once I plugged in, I went straight to Veronique's abilities. "This'll only take a minute," I reminded her. "So, relax." "Interesting," I thought when I saw that the grayed-out options were now visible. As it turned out, Veronique only had one overarching superpower, and, to my surprise, her vampire-like ability was actually an extension of that power. Main, metal absorption and modification. Wielding capacity, 5. Adaption speed, 6. Alloy integrity, 4. Blood-metal conversion, 6. Blood metal conversion? I read the description again, impressed. Veronique wasn't draining a person's life per se. She was absorbing any and all of the metals in their body, which eventually killed them because it increased the toxicity of these metals as they moved out of their bodies. "And it's also what you feed on," I said, looking up at her. "You convert this metal into sustenance. Or, more specifically, your body does."
"So now you know. Happy?"
"If you want me to play around with adjusting any of these abilities, let me know. For example, increasing your alloy integrity might make the structures you create stronger and better. Not that they aren't already good. The thing is, your abilities are all around the mid-level, ranked from 4 to 6. Wielding capacity, adaption speed, alloy integrity, blood metal conversion, they're all mid-level." She thought about that for a moment, still staring up at the ceiling to avoid messing with the cords sticking out of her neck.
"And wielding capacity would allow me to modify larger objects, right?"
"I believe so."
"See what happens if you turn that one up."
Turning the wielding capacity dial up increased alloy integrity, but doing so brought adaption speed down. I played around with the settings for a moment until I leveled them out somewhat. Now they looked like this. Main. Metal absorption and modification. Wielding capacity, 7. Adaption speed, 5. Alloy integrity, 5. Blood metal conversion, 6.
"I think we've done enough for today,"
Veronique said. She unplugged the cable herself and sat up. "Yeah, no problem," I said. "I mean, it's up to you, but I hope we can do more later. I know you're sensitive about your drive, but there's a lot I'd love to play with."
"I know you want to play with my drive,"
she said, holding my gaze.
"And maybe you'll be able to soon."
She got off the bed and left the room, leaving me to my laptop. Chapter 12. A Day in the Life of a Fugitive. I reread the newest message from David Butler. "Where the hell are you? I thought you'd be in Austin by now. I have important details to show you, and I'm waiting for you to get your ass here. Update me. DB." What's with this guy? I thought as I typed out a quick reply. "We'll be in Austin tomorrow. Let's meet in a public place." I hit send and received a reply back within seconds. "No, we will meet at my place." He gave me the address, and I quickly found it on Google Face Maps. It was in the western part of Austin, not far from Bee Caves Road. Judging by the size of the houses in the area, I could see that he lived in the rich part of the city. About 20 minutes and a ton of Google Face inquiries later, I found that my initial assumption was most definitely true, that it only got richer the farther west you traveled. Interesting. I'd heard Austin was an appealing place to live, its only drawbacks being the housing prices and its terribly hot summers. Most Americans knew Texans and their pride. I'd already seen it coming into the state. The big flags in front of the people's houses, the sticker flags on the backs of their trucks, the "Don't Mess with Texas" road signs. It was the exact opposite of what I was used to in New England, which focused more on patriotism as a whole, something that was shared rather than hoarded and shielded. The thoroughfares were set up differently here, too. Cities in the other states we'd driven through were set away from the traffic, usually hidden from view by trees. Everything in Texas was built right along the road. You could literally have the entrance to your home jutting off the highway. From what I could tell, this was the way Longview had been built, a city sprouting around the highway, cushioning it like a hot dog bun. "Barbecue or Mexican food?" I asked Grace as we prepared to leave the hotel. She chose barbecue, and after Veronique drained just a little more energy from Dorian, we hit the streets. Coleslaw, baked beans, cornbread, potato salad, ribs, pulled pork, grilled chicken, brisket. Grace and I ate like southern royalty. Veronique ate a little, mostly the brisket, and once we finished, we took a quick trip to the mall to get her more clothing. I would have preferred to stay at our hotel while they shopped, but I was worried about them going out alone. If they were captured or if something happened to them, I would be completely screwed. Aside from the fact that I'd be stuck in a hotel room with Dorian, who would eventually wake up, I would be without a purpose and without the two women who were the reason for my crusade. Crusade? A sci-fi writer going up against the FCG and Merc Secure could be considered one of two things. A suicide or a crusade. I was banking on the latter. The other reason I wished they could have gone alone is that I hate malls. There's nothing scarier to me than a mall full of people. From shootings to terrorist attacks, malls had become hotbeds for public violence. To the generation following mine, malls would be nostalgic. To my generation, they were slightly toxic. But I couldn't let the two go in alone. "Let's make this quick," I said under my breath as we left our vehicle. We would get a new one when we came back, another chance to test drive a different model. Grace and Veronique were also not feeling the crowd at the mall, even if it was relatively small. There were just too many people around, so we tried to make it as quick as possible. Aside from purchasing a Houston Texans jersey, mostly because it seemed a little lighter than my New England clothing, I stood outside the stores, taking notes on my smartphone about what I wanted to write later that day and keeping an eye on the crowd. I was getting close to completing the second Mutants in the Making, and if I worked hard at it, I could have it done by tonight. We were only 4 hours away from Austin. Rather than stay where we were another day, I figured we'd leave later that night so we could get a feel for our situation once we arrived. For once, everything went smoothly while we were on our shopping excursion. Veronique was disappointed that the mall didn't have any mil-spec outfits, which was kind of funny. I suggested we go to an outdoor store, but I figured most of the stuff in Texas wouldn't be what she was looking for. There would be plenty of camo and bright orange jumpsuits, but there wouldn't be form-fitting black bodysuits. So, she got the next best thing. With Grace as her shopping assistant and funding all the purchases, they found a few outfits Veronique liked, as well as a jacket. Although, it was already 90-something degrees outside, so definitely not jacket weather. She also bought a lot of undergarments from Victor and Victoria's Secret, a store that used to be just for women but had changed by 2030 due to gender binarism debates. We got back to the hotel, and Veronique drained more from Dorian. I started writing my ass off, and right around the time I'd gotten to the end point, I ordered a pizza. Everything was going according to plan. Sound the trumpets and bring out the booze. I had finished my manuscript. AI had edited the chapters, and I was ready to birth my creation onto the masses. Other writers be damned, make room for Gideon Caldwell at the top. With a fresh manuscript in its appropriate folder on my computer, I pulled up the eBayMazon dashboard, uploaded the cover, fleshed out the product description, damn did I hate doing that, and uploaded the final file. It's missing something, I thought as I reopened the file. I went through the collection of book quotes I keep and picked one by Ralph Waldo Emerson. We, as we read, must become Greeks, Romans, Turks, priest and king, martyr and executioner, must fasten these images to some reality in our secret experience, or we shall learn nothing rightly. I went for the 99-cent price point only because I didn't need money any longer, and I was going for that big Andy Weir launch part deux. After checking everything for a final time, I put the book up for sale, which meant it would take 10 to 12 hours to be approved. I closed the laptop and exhaled audibly. Grace and Veronique were back on their home improvement show, this one about fixer-upper homes in Britain, and there I was in the other room feeling like $1 million. Actually, finishing a book doesn't quite feel like $1 million. It feels more like a burden has been removed from your shoulders, only to have another one ready to drop, aka the next book. But it did feel good at the time, and even a brief interlude of not having the book on my shoulders was worth its weight in gold. With nothing better to do, aside from pat myself on the back, I went into the other room to wait for the pizza. "Room for me on that bed?" I asked, half joking.
"Yep,"
Veronique said, moving aside so I could crawl between them. How I kept living every fanboy's dream, I had no idea. But I wasn't complaining. With Grace on my left and Veronique on my right, I tried to keep my focus on the television. Once this failed, I turned to my phone and saw that Luke was active. Me. "Bruh, what's going on?" Luke. "I'm revamping the cover for the first Stardefacer book. What do you think?" His new cover featured a dark purple background and an intricately detailed skull. He'd gone for a golden yellow font color, and there was even a smaller skull with spikes sticking out of it between the words Star and Defacer, which tied it all together. Me. "Definitely cool. I liked the first one, too. It had a vibe." Luke. "I know, but now that the series is selling, I want to do a little rebranding and upgrade." Me. "Nothing wrong with that. I like the little skull in the middle, with the spiky head. Looks killer." Luke. "Hell yeah. People love skulls. I don't know why." Me. "Me neither. Maybe it's because humans have a weird fascination with their own mortality and the skull represents a watered-down version of this." Luke. "Publishing a philosophy book next?" Me. "Hardly. Just trying to make it to Austin in one piece and get my ass some pizza." Luke. "I feel that." "Damn, kid. Got about 300 questions for you, but I'll start at the top. Did he hit pub on Mutants in the Making too?" Me. "It's like you're reading my mind or something. I just did, like 10 minutes ago. So it'll be up by tomorrow for sure. But maybe even by tonight if the eBayMazon gods process it quickly." Luke. "Last I checked, you're holding your ranking, which means people are digging it. I hope the second book grabs even more readers." Me. "It should. The second book gets into details of the assault and Angel and Dorian Gray, but just the start of that story, because I don't know how that's going to play out." Luke. "LOL. Yeah, she's there now." Me. "Did I already tell you that? Sorry, I'm in a bit of a daze. I somehow managed to write 10,000 words today, 6,000 in a frenzied afternoon sprint. My hands are killing me. I'm just glad to be inside with the AC and some pizza coming." Luke. "AC. Oh, that's right, you're down south." Me. "Hot as balls." Luke. Did you go with the pink cover for MM2? Me. Yeah, I think it'll look good, especially on reading devices. You want to see some of my throwaway covers? Luke. Hold on, let me go to the bathroom, take my pants off, and sit, just in case I feel the urge to shit myself. Me. Ha, they're not that bad. Okay, I made this one 3 days ago. I was a little delirious at the time. Terrible, I know, but speaking of skulls... I loaded the file for Luke, knowing instantly that the cover was shit. This one had two small skeletons holding hands and standing between two larger skeletons without heads. Luke. The two big skeletons had sex, and those are their children. Also, the adult skeletons are headless. Me. I definitely wasn't at my best when I made that. I also made this one. Warning. I don't know what I was smoking when I thought this would be a good cover. Sometimes I have to make a bunch of crappy covers before I can really hit my stride and make one that looks good. I waited for a moment for the file to load, cringing at what I saw. I found a statue of a woman bending forward a little, both hands on one of her thighs. She was nude, but most of her lady bits were covered by shadow. There were also orange flowers overlaid on top of the image, and I hadn't done the best job of blending them. Luke. Brutal. And by brutal, I mean brutally bad. Me. Yeah, definitely not good. Luke. Were you trying to cover her nipples with font? Because you failed.
LOL.
Also, are those supposed to be little explosions behind her? Me. They're flowers. Luke. Well, I can say that I like the font. Me. I also made this one. Dark blue, a woman's silhouette accented by a yellow light and a big dose of mystery. This cover wasn't too bad, but it still wasn't right for mutants in the making. Luke. What's she supposed to be looking at? Looks like something from a Poltergeist remake. Me. A light, a beacon of truth? Luke. Okay, I see it now. How is it that you make such terrible covers and then make one that just hits? Me. No idea, but luckily, fourth time was a charm. I showed him the pretty in pink cover, the one with part of a woman's face behind a torn pink wall, her nose, lips, and chin exposed. Luke. Looks like a winner to me. Hey, got a question for you. You said you're planning to meet this guy in Austin? You going prepared? Me. I believe I'm going prepared. I have two human weapons with me, and I was able to modify Veronique a little bit. Luke. Great. What were you able to do? Me. Well, the readers that like stats and modifying abilities will love the fact that I was finally able to dig down a little deeper into Veronique's situation and figure out more about her power. Turns out, she's not a vampire. Luke.
LOL.
Me. She actually drains the metal from people's bodies. Sounds weird, but you know there's a lot of different metals floating around in our bodies and bloodstreams. I'm not claiming to be a scientist here, obviously, but that's what she does. Hell, she's done it to me, and it feels really strange. Luke. Wait a minute. Her ability allows her to modify the atomic structure of the metal and pull it through someone's skin? If I were reading this in a book, I would call BS. Me. I wouldn't call BS only because I'm not so hot on the science part of science fiction. I'll leave that to Neal Stephenson and some of the military sci-fi guys who can roast me any way they want over this shit because the fact of the matter is, it's true. Luke. What you are experiencing and writing about isn't fiction, so that's why it's kind of funny I'd call BS on it. Me. What can I say? Even my own life has some plot holes. I'm sure there's more to the science part, but I'll let someone else explain that. Someone knocked on the door. Pizza had arrived. Me. Shit just got real. Luke. What do you mean? Me. Pizza's here. Gotta eat and run. Luke. Enjoy, and good luck. As Grace got up from the bed and moved to the door, she morphed into a Texan she'd seen earlier. Her hair was frizzy and big, and she wore a pinkish-red button-up shirt, a bolo tie, a pair of tight Wranglers hugging her ass, and some elaborate cowboy boots. No cowboy hat, though, which made me wonder if she couldn't morph a hat. But she did get the accent down.
Howdy,
she said when she opened the door.
Two Hawaiian pizzas, one with chicken instead of Canadian bacon?
The delivery driver asked.
I do believe that's what we ordered. Ain't that right, Kenny?
I looked at Veronique. Am I supposed to be Kenny?
That's right, Grace.
Veronique said, trying her best deep-voiced country accent and failing miserably. Luckily, the delivery guy couldn't see us.
Great,
the guy said and handed Grace the pizza.
Now, Gerald, you gonna get on over here and get these here pizzas or what? Can't y'all get your butts off the bed?
I'm Gerald and you're Kenny, right? I asked Veronique. She nodded, a genuine smile spreading across her face. I then tried to imagine what the delivery driver was thinking when he saw a hot country girl open the door and say there were two men in the room with her, both on the bed. Good thing we're going to wipe his mind.
Can I feed too, Gideon?
Veronique asked me, her hand falling on my arm as I slipped off the bed. Later, I said. She shrugged and turned back to the TV. I took a deep breath and approached the door. Grace gave me the pizzas. Damn if they didn't smell good.
Yep, that's right,
Grace told the driver.
I already done paid y'all.
Oh,
the man said as he looked at the receipt he still held.
I see that now.
No, we can pay. I put the pizza down on a table near the door and grabbed my wallet, pulling out 2 20s. I gave the driver $40, told Grace to make sure he didn't remember any of this, and we bid him farewell.
I love pizza. I love, love pizza,
Grace said, morphing back into her base form. I opened the box and frowned at the greasy mess dotted with pineapples. Don't get your hopes up. The pizza wasn't so great, but at least it was cheesy. I guess that's the thing about most pizza. It has cheese. But this pizza was definitely not the best I'd had. Hell, it wasn't even the best I'd had from Wendy's Hut. Still, it hit the spot. After we finished eating, we packed up and headed to our car, Veronique using her powers again to drag Dorian behind us. Chapter 13. Endgame Dreams. We headed west on I-20 and eventually reached the outskirts of Dallas. The farther we got away from the eastern part of Texas, the drier it became. It was still hot outside. Our Subaru's temperature said it was 88 degrees, and the cityscape quickly morphed from gone country to urban cowboy as we zipped by Dallas.
It's so big,
Grace said as she looked out the window. We weren't cutting through downtown Dallas as much as we were skirting around it. The highways all made circles around the city, reminding me of a spiderweb. We only touched the lower right-hand quadrant of Dallas as we transferred to I-35, but we did get to see the city, the lights at night, and the new buildings under construction. As she normally did, Veronique sat in the back seat with Dorian next to her. Every time I glanced in the rearview mirror, I either caught a glimpse of Veronique looking directly at me, which was kind of creepy, or Dorian sitting there with her eyes glued shut. Also creepy. We have to figure out what to do about her, I thought as I drove around a slow-moving Ford Escape.
We will,
I smirked. You aren't supposed to be reading my thoughts.
There's nothing else to read.
You can read my phone.
Reading while writing gives me a headache.
Then find something different to listen to, I told her. For the last 20 minutes, we'd been listening to a local Tejano station, which was kind of cool, but which was also starting to drive me mad with its up-tempo beats.
Would you like to listen to NPR?
She asked in Ira Glass's voice.
I'm Ira Glass, and each week we take an adventure across America in search of secret government facilities.
Man, Ira would love to get his hands on this story, I said. I took over the wheel from the auto drive function. I felt like being in control at the moment.
Yes or no?
She asked, still using his voice. No for now. Let's get some music going, something dancey. Grace flipped through the stations until she found one playing disco hits from the 70s. I tightened my grip on the steering wheel. Disco works for me. So after going through Waco, Round Rock, and a slew of other smaller cities, we drove into Austin jamming disco. I wouldn't recommend 3 hours of straight disco to anyone. That said, it did make the drive faster.
Who's ready to stay in a mansion tonight? I asked as we took the 183 exit, heading toward Mopac and Westlake Hills. Mopac passed over Lady Bird Lake, and Veronique pointed at some of the mansions that lined the water. Stay at a mansion in Austin? Let's do it. We took the Westlake Hills exit. To get to the lakeside mansions, we'd need to take the loop around and then hit one of the roads that cut through Zilker Park. I wanted to find one that wasn't gated in. Not that we couldn't get in a gate with Veronique and Grace's abilities. After driving around for a few minutes, we found a gateless home the size of a grocery store. The entrance sloped down to a 5-car garage. To the right of the garage was a door that a giant could get through. And I shit you not, a bridge from the parking area to the front door. We'd need to get rid of our current vehicle, but that would be easy once we found a family member. We left Dorian in the car as we approached the front door, where Veronique worked her magic to let us in. The first person to greet us was a kid, a boy about 10 years old, who was walking across the living room to get something from the kitchen. Grace immediately took over his mind and told him to introduce her to everyone in the house. She followed him, and soon Grace also had the husband, the wife, and a teenage daughter in the living room and under her spell. "The first thing I want to happen is for you to get rid of our vehicle," I told the husband, "and come back here with an Uber Lyft." The husband was a fit guy, someone who worked out regularly, with a sprinkling of white in his beard and large eyebrows. He simply nodded at me and left. The other three stood before us, completely transfixed. The wife had had a lot of work done on her face and body, Botox and a boob job. Those were just things I noticed off the bat. There was nothing that really stood out about the boy, aside from the darkness of his hair. And the teenage daughter looked pretty much like the boy, only taller, with zits on her chin and wearing designer pajamas.
"Shall I get Dorian?"
Veronique asked me.
"Also, I'm a little hungry."
"Yeah, bring her in the living room." I didn't know if the place we were standing in was a living room or something else entirely. I would later find out that the house had two living rooms, and this room, which featured a piano and a floor-to-ceiling view of the lake outside the window, was simply the foyer. Or something like that. Like I said, I'm not great with architecture. Veronique returned, dragging Dorian behind her. The family ignored Veronique as she placed Dorian on one of the sofa chairs and made sure she was properly drained of her energy. Grace yawned.
"I'm getting tired, Gideon,"
she said, and went to sit next to Dorian, which was a bit strange considering the circumstances and the fact the family still stood there, waiting for orders. "We need to handle the family before you can go to bed. Have them all go to one of the bedrooms upstairs. The son's bedroom. That's fine. Whatever. Does he have a bathroom in there?" The boy nodded. "Great. Tell them to turn off their phones and stay there for the next 24 hours. Eventually, they'll snap out of it and wonder what the hell's going on, but we'll be long gone by then." She yawned.
"Can I go to bed after that?"
"Sure. Just stay up long enough for the husband to get back." While Grace sat in the living room waiting for the husband's return, the rest of the family went upstairs to the boy's bedroom. That was the last I'd see of them. Meanwhile, Veronique and I took a tour of the place. It had 7 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, 2 living rooms, an enormous workout room, 2 offices, and a very nice but small backyard that overlooked Town Lake with access to the water via a dock. "Let's see what vehicles we're working with," I said. We entered the garage through the kitchen to find a Cadillac Escalade and 2 Porsches, one an SUV and the other a sports car. The teenage daughter had a Volkswagen, and there was also a completely restored 1955 Thunderbird in the carport farthest from the kitchen. I don't know what they did to get all that money, but it didn't involve publishing 99-cent e-books. I pressed the button to open the garage door just as lights flashed in the driveway, the husband returning in an Uber Lyft. He hardly made eye contact with me as he went back into the house and, I assumed, straight up to his son's bedroom. Before going back inside, Veronique and I stood on the bridge that led from the garage to the front door. It was a warm night, and mosquitoes buzzed in the air. It was also humid, and I was glad I didn't grow up with this type of climate. Sure, the cold and the snow could get old, but this heat. Rather than think about how I was from New England and wasn't used to the South, I went inside to find Dorian still sitting on the couch in the foyer.
Let's just make sure she sleeps for the night,
Veronique said as she approached the teleporting rocker. She placed her hand on Dorian's head, and a red aura formed around her fingers. I looked around for Grace and found her asleep in one of the living rooms. Figuring it'd be nice to get a good night's sleep as well, I found one of the guest bedrooms and lay down on the bed. Damn it. I should have bought something aside from this ironic Houston Texans jersey I got at the mall. I took off the jersey and tossed my pants and socks to the floor. Most of my clothes were for colder weather, not this heat. I figured I would check this guy's closet for things to wear tomorrow, but I had a feeling he and I didn't share a style. Still, maybe he had some collared shirts. As I lay there on the bed, I heard the door handle twist open. Even though my glasses were off, I knew who it was just by the sound of the door. It didn't sound like a door being opened normally. I'd heard Veronique use her power enough times to notice the subtle difference between something natural and her ability to command metal. Or maybe I just intuited it was her.
How are things?
She asked, almost a deadpan. It was then I remembered that her charisma was quite low. Maybe she didn't mean to be as stiff as she came across. Things are okay. I'm a little nervous about tomorrow.
Why?
She asked and sat on the bed beside me. I just have a feeling we're going into something kind of strange. We need to be ready. I don't want you two to kill anyone if you don't have to, nor do I want to do something that'll get us in even more trouble than we're already in. This guy may actually have information that could help us.
And if he doesn't?
I placed my hands behind my head. I could feel that my hair was already starting to grow out, and if I was truly going for the shaved head look, I'd need to get a haircut in the next week or so. This got me thinking about when I'd decided to shave my head at the Black Barbershop in New Haven. It was right after I received the scar on my face, a scar I had since grown used to. It was still healing, actually, still a little pink. Once the skin hardened, I'd look like a fucking mercenary. So that was something to look forward to.
Why are you smiling?
Just getting high on my own supply. Sorry. She lay down next to me, and I felt tension increase between us. We looked at each other for a moment. My mouth opened, and words spilled out. So, like I was saying, I'm a little worried about tomorrow. Yep, definitely worried. Damn, tomorrow. Today was nice, though, but tomorrow, who knows what could happen.
I'm not worried.
Of course you aren't. You can pretty much do anything with your abilities. Veronique moved just a little closer to me. She now lay on her side, strands of blonde hair in her face.
You place too much confidence in what we can do.
I reached out and brushed the hair from her face. Damn right I do. All I can do is drive, write, and try to put the pieces together so maybe we can actually complete this puzzle. I mean, not that it's a big puzzle. We're talking about a government experiment, super soldiers, that sort of thing. Nothing deeper than that, I'm afraid. I get it. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud. I just worry sometimes about the end game.
End game?
Her hand landed on my cheek and I swallowed hard. Yeah, end game. Let's say we do this. We destroy the facilities and take care of Mother, unite the people with superpowers and play that whole thing out. What next? I asked, my voice softening. It was strange to be this close to Veronique, especially knowing she could drain my energy in a heartbeat. Even as I stared into her dark eyes, I knew she could turn the tables very quickly. But would she? That was the thing about her. Even though she'd shown me no sign she would double-cross us, or that she would turn on me, I still remembered the Veronique who burst into our room back in East Haven and later took me hostage. It was still hard to separate the two, the trained soldier and the Veronique I'd come to know.
Why are you so worried about our endgame?
She finally asked.
This ends when it ends, and there's little we can do to stop it from ending at that time. We don't know the future. We only know what happened in the past. And for Grace and me, what we are doing now is far better than what was happening to us in our past. So, was that our endgame? What happens after an endgame?
I smirked at her. I don't think you understand the term endgame, at least in the same way I do.
Oh?
She moved her hand from my cheek to the side of my neck. And I'm not trying to mansplain here, but the whole idea of end game is that it is the end of the game, hence end game.
I see. In that case, we will win, and Grace and I will design a very nice home for all of us to live in, somewhere secluded, but with access to a city.
And by we, do you mean me too? I asked, a slight hesitation in my voice.
I suppose you can live with us. I'm sure Grace would like that. Maybe I would like that too. But you're going to have to write more books because that is your superpower. Your superpower is writing books. So, if you come live with us in this beautiful house we're going to customize and remodel, you have to write books. You can have a writing room and a nook, I believe it is called.
I laughed. That is a great fantasy right there.
Maybe we can get a dog and have some kids.
I gulped. Have kids?
We can start a family. I don't know, just dreams. Endgame dreams.
The door opened, and Grace walked in, wearing a robe. She yawned, saw that Veronique was on the bed, and stopped.
We were just talking about our dream home,
Veronique said, getting up from the bed and leaving the room.
The one you and I discussed.
Holy shit. Does Grace have Veronique in check?
Yes, I do.
I froze as I heard Grace's voice in my head.
But if you'd like her to stay in here for tonight, that's fine by me.
Veronique was gone before I could respond. Grace got into bed, yawned, and turned to me as if nothing had just happened.
I'm very tired tonight,
she said, her eyes going from slightly white to iceberg blue.
Too much shopping, disco, pizza, and barbecue.
Good night, Grace. Try as I might to fall asleep, I lay awake for 30 more minutes thinking about all that had happened. I didn't know where I stood on polyamory, having more than one love interest at a time, and I didn't want to figure that out right now. I wanted to be prepared for tomorrow, but I had no idea what to prepare for. For all I knew, we would just meet this guy and he would give us some information and things would go fine. But they could go the opposite way as well. Chapter 14. Dorian wakes. I was up earlier than anyone else in the house. I knew that because it was just a little after 5 a.m., a time when no one in their right mind should be awake. My email inbox was full. My new book had been published. I looked at my smartphone for a moment longer just to confirm this. I could check my sales and ranking later. It was actually the last thing on my mind as I moved out of the bedroom and into the hallway to get something to drink. We were on the upper floor, and I was thirsty. Rather than drink from the faucet, I headed downstairs and was greeted by a beautiful sunrise, underscored by a zigzag of pink on the surface of the lake. It was weird to see Dorian just sitting there in the sofa chair, perfectly still, her eyes closed. Eerie didn't begin to describe it. I got some expensive juice from the fridge and filled a glass. "I don't know what we're gonna do with you," I said as I returned to Dorian and sat across from her. Her black hair, her punk rock accoutrements, her petite body. She looked the exact opposite of Grace and Veronique. But then again, who knew what Grace actually looked like? I hadn't forgotten the time she had shown me a thin, dark-haired woman with acne when I asked her to show me her true form. She hadn't shown me that form since, and for all I knew, she was just messing with me. There was a lot I'd never understand about shapeshifters, and I always had this feeling she was hiding something from me. Whereas Veronique wore her personality on her sleeve, I understood who she was, and I usually understood her intent. But Grace? Not so much. They'd make great fictional characters, though. One, almost a girl next door, but with a secret. The second one, dangerous, but soft at the core. Maybe after all this was finished, I would get to writing fiction again, and I could let those characters play out in my mind. My rambling, author-centric thoughts came to a sudden halt when Dorian's eyes opened. I gasped as her black eyes locked onto me. I could feel the blood draining from my face. "Was the only sound my throat could make. I felt as if I'd woken a sleeping lion, that I had come face to face with a carnivore.
"Thirsty,"
she whispered, her throat quivering. "You're thirsty?" We both glanced at my juice. Oddly enough, I'd had this feeling of complete and utter apprehension before, and it was with Veronique, when she assaulted Grace in the hotel at Stamford and had come for me. One thing I learned about these types of encounters was that you could either stare the beast down and figure out what it wanted, which could result in your death, or you could run. As I had before, I chose to make peace with the predator. Not saying a word, I took my glass of juice to her. She tilted her head back slightly, and I brought it up to her parched lips. She quickly finished the juice. "Do you want more?" I asked, my nerves tingling. She nodded. I looked toward the kitchen, which now felt like it was a mile away. For all I knew, she could teleport away by the time I returned, or she could create a person made of kinetic energy to kill me. It didn't have to be a person. Could be anything, really. But my name is Gideon Caldwell, and I am an idiot. So I went to the kitchen and got her some more juice, and she was halfway through the next glass when Grace and Veronique appeared. Veronique practically launched herself at Dorian. Her hand fell on Dorian's head, and as it glowed red, the teleporter's eyes rolled back. Veronique narrowed her eyes at me.
"You are an idiot, Gideon."
"I was just thinking that."
"I'm just glad I heard you leave the room,"
Grace said. "Wait, were you able to see what I was doing up here?" I touched my face. "No way she's that powerful." Grace nodded.
"But you already knew I was."
It was true. I'd already sensed this, but it was early and I was still a little bit delirious. Veronique continued to drain Dorian. "Lighten up a bit," I told her. "She could have done something, but she didn't. We're going to have to deal with her at some point. What if we can turn her?" Grace placed a hand on my shoulder.
"You can't trust everyone, Ryder Gideon."
"I trusted you," I said to her. I looked at Veronique. "And I trust you, even though you once basically tried to kill her and imprisoned me."
"People change,"
was all she finally said. "Exactly, which is why I think Dorian could change." Confidence returned to my voice. "It's just a hunch right now, but we're going to have to work with her if we want her to join us and see our side. We can't kill her, or at least we shouldn't, and her abilities would be monstrously helpful to our cause."
"Maybe you're right,"
Veronique said.
"But for now, we keep her sedated."
"I'm fine with that."
"Who's hungry?"
Grace asked, trying to lighten the mood. "It's 5 in the morning, I reminded her.
"Almost 5:30 now."
"Actually, that's a great idea." Once again, Grace had implanted a thought in my brain. Magnolia Cafe on Lake Austin Boulevard was open 24 hours. From the reviews I'd read, it looked like it had pretty damn good food. But there was also the Omelettery, another Google Face recommendation, and they had amazing pancakes, apparently. It was a tough call, but I had to go with the pancakes. We found the Omelettery and got there about 20 minutes after they'd opened. It was a well-lit place, with a drawing of anthropomorphized eggs on the walls. Our waitress came, a tattooed and pierced Austin hipster with short hair on one side and long hair on the other. Cool. The coffee was poured, and even Veronique had a cup. I ordered the economical with buttermilk pancakes, and Grace had a yogurt parfait with gingerbread pancakes. I got a couple looks from the guys who came in, especially when they saw me sitting with Veronique, a hot blonde with strikingly sharp features, and Grace, who had gone with her brunette and yoga pants yet again. I had never been the envy of other guys, never been a broed-out guy's guy for that matter, and it was still strange to see people look between me and the two women with me, trying to figure out how I had pulled it off. "No shifting in public," I reminded Grace, as her hair began to change to match our waitress's. I finished my coffee. The waitress spotted it and went for a fresh pot.
"Okay,"
she whined. The food came, and we dug in. I started with the pancakes, spreading out the big lump of butter on top and smothering it with syrup. From there, I moved to the sausage, the eggs, and another cup of coffee to boot. Grace started with the pancakes as well and finished her parfait off relatively quickly. She shared one of the pancakes with Veronique, who ate it, but didn't seem to enjoy it very much.
"It's too sweet,"
she said. "It's good for you," I assured her.
"Why do I feel like you're lying to me?"
"I'd never do that."
"Grace,
he's lying."
My knife started to bend backward, and as I put it down, Veronique dropped her hand onto mine.
"Careful,"
she reminded me, to Grace's laughter. "Please bend my knife back." After we finished eating, we headed back to Mopac, and from there, I let Google Face Maps route us to Butler's house. The estates in West Austin rivaled some of the mansions I'd seen in Greenwich, Connecticut. No, they didn't have an oceanfront view, but they did have helipads, pools, hundreds of private acres, and amazing views of downtown Austin. Even better, most of them didn't have gates. You could seriously just drive up to these million-dollar homes and park. We were in the Porsche SUV, the first time I'd driven in a Porsche, actually. I would have driven our host's neon green Porsche 911 GT3, but it only fit two people. Still, the SUV handled like a beauty, and it could get going pretty quickly on the highway. "Anybody want to check it out again?" I asked as we passed Butler's house. It was tucked away, I'd give it that. And down the winding driveway looked to be another guest house, only adding to the spread of the estate. The girls didn't say anything. I glanced at Grace next to me and saw that she was the fullest I'd ever seen her. Her hands on her stomach, she had already switched to the waitress's haircut, and her eyes were closed as she dealt with her food baby. I started to laugh. "You doing all right over there?" Grace yawned.
"You woke us up pretty early."
"My mistake." We passed the place again. There weren't any turrets, and I didn't see anything in place to protect it from superpowered individuals, so we continued on. We arrived back at our current mansion at 7:30. Dorian was just where we left her, and I even checked on the family upstairs. I can't emphasize enough how creepy Grace's ability can be. I knocked on the door of the son's bedroom and was told I could enter. Once I opened the door, I found all four of them sitting on the edge of the bed next to each other, staring at the wall, their eyes white. It only took me about 2 seconds to have seen enough of that, so I shut the door and went back downstairs. Since we had time to kill, I figured I would check on my book's deets. While Grace and Veronique napped, this time in the same room as Dorian, I pulled out my laptop. I logged on and saw I was moving books like crack in the 1980s. Since the release of the second book, I was averaging close to 100,000 page reads a day, which, for two novellas, was hella good. I almost baited myself into checking reviews, but, like I had done in the past, I shied away from doing that. Better that way. I started the absolutely terrible task of going through my emails, trying to figure out which ones I should respond to, which ones were spam, and which ones were worse. A good 24 readers had contacted me about my story, a few wanting photo evidence. There was another message from David Butler, reminding me that our meeting was at noon. There was also a message from Ken Kim, asking me for an update. I ignored them. I still had two throwaway phones, so maybe I'd give Ken a call at some point. Or he would call me, because that was what happened last time, and I was still highly suspicious about it. With several hours to kill, I did what anyone with access to a computer and some free time did. Nope, not porn. Rather, I surfed the web aimlessly, watching cat videos, catching up on some of the subreddits I followed, and reading about new video games that were coming out. Had I known what was going to happen next, I would have at least gotten halfway prepared. I was a fool, and the fact that I didn't have a plan was about to come back and bite me in the ass. Chapter 15. Snack Attack. The only thing we needed to do before we left our borrowed mansion was make sure the owners didn't come looking for their Porsche SUV. Easy peasy. I had Grace convince the family they never owned the vehicle. We'd be way out of Austin with a new vehicle by the time they unraveled those pieces. It was easier that way. With Dorian laid out sideways in the cargo area of the Porsche, we headed to Butler's place. It was already in the 80s outside, so we would need to park in the shade. I didn't plan to be there very long, at least for this visit, and I planned to keep the SUV running while we were inside, which was easy to do because there was an option on the keyless entry.